In celebration of the 50th anniversary of Montaña de Oro becoming a state park, an art exhibit at the Morro Bay State Park Museum of Natural History. Coming up next, we visit with two of the participating artists. Good afternoon. My name is Stephen DeLuque, and with co-host Krista Hewitt, we are the voices behind this program, Ears on Art, a twice-monthly program produced at the studios of listener-supported KCBX, public radio serving the California Central Coast from Salinas to Ventura. Ears on Art is dedicated to the exploration and advancement of the visual arts, and in this program, we visit with two plein air painters, Denise Shriver and Bruce Everett, who are both members for the San Luis Outdoor Painters for the Environment, also known as SLOPE. SLOPE, in honor of the 50th anniversary of Montaña de Oro becoming a state park, has organized a showing of artworks inspired by the park. The exhibit will be displayed at the Morro Bay State Park Museum of Natural History for the month of February. More information about the parks and the museum's hours of operation will come up at the end of the show. Now, let's meet our two guest artists. Good afternoon. I am Stephen DeLuque, and I am here up in Templeton at the studio of Bruce Everett. Good afternoon, Bruce.
Hi, Stephen.
And Denise Shriver is here as well. Good afternoon, Denise.
Good afternoon, Stephen.
And Chris is sitting at the other end of the table.
We're all here.
We are here today to talk about an art show that is coming up at the Morro Bay State Park Museum of Natural History. It's being sponsored by SLOPE. And Denise, if you would, please tell us what SLOPE is.
SLOPE stands for San Luis Outdoor Painters for the Environment. And we're a group of professional artists that paint to preserve our environment by our artwork and to bring awareness, public awareness. And then we donate some of the funds to the organization that we're working with.
How did you get connected with the Morro Bay State Park Museum?
One of our members, Roseanne Seitz, talked with one of the directors there. We wanted to do something because it's the 50th anniversary of Montaña de Oro as being a state park. And so they said, let's do it.
That's great. And Bruce, how long have you been involved with SLOPE?
I think it's been about 6 years. I moved up here in 2007. One day, Dottie Hawthorne, who was very active in SLOPE, in fact, was the president for quite a few years, came to the studio and introduced herself and asked me if I might want to consider applying. It was shortly after that that I was in.
Now you were conscripted.
Conscripted, yes.
And I understand, Denise, that you are president?
I am. I'm on my second year being president, and I've been in a SLOPE member since 2001. I'm very happy about that.
How many of these projects have you participated in, or do they sponsor?
We usually sponsor one a year, and so I participated in every one since 2001. On occasion, we've done two a year, but usually one.
We had the good fortune in 2000-something to come out and visit a group of you out in Carrizo Plains. It happened to be a year of a lot of rain, and the lupin were just amazing. I'm sure that every time you come to a place, even though you've been there many times, if you're doing it that particular year, you're not sure what you're going to capture, I assume.
Yes, that's true. And also, a lot of the properties that we paint on, they're in a precarious position where they might be developed. And so it could not be there. It could not look like that the next year.
Now we're going to get into the specifics here. Bruce, how would you describe your artwork?
I have to say it's sort of a painterly realism. Or painterly photorealism at times. And the two different styles. One is in the studio where I spend up to a month or two on a painting. In that case, it's pretty tight and studied. And the plein air paintings are done as usual in a few hours. Those are really kind of refreshing to do because spending up to 2 months on one painting and then taking a break and doing one in a few hours is really quite exciting and gratifying. So instant gratification.
And we have just spent a little bit of time in your studio, and your paintings go from relatively small to huge.
Well, the largest painting I've done was 10 by 13 feet, and that was for a commission down in Los Angeles, which surprisingly took about a month and a half also, instead of a year or two, because I have spent up to 3 years on a painting, and I don't think I'll ever be doing that again. My style changed quite a bit, or paint handling changed quite a bit. So I was able to do a painting that would normally take a couple of years in about a month and a half or so. The way it worked out was I just used bigger brushes. And it was all scaled up. It worked out just about the same amount of time.
What sorts of things are you doing differently now than when you were taking that extensive amount of time?
When I was painting a painting over a period of 3 years, I was actually painting the photograph in every bit of detail I could find. In the photograph, almost a philosophical attitude towards painting very realistically, painting only what I saw. And I wasn't trying to express anything particularly. So I had to choose something that I really wanted to paint badly for 3 years. I didn't know it was going to take that long, but once halfway through, I wasn't going to turn around and stop. After a couple of paintings of that type, I changed to a more painterly style. I had done some abstraction in the past, and I enjoyed the quality of paint and brushwork, edges, overlays, things of that sort. And when I started to do these other paintings, what I ended up doing was painting the background rather tight, and then as I advanced to the foreground, I would start to loosen up considerably. So there's a backwards and forwards. When you get it close to the painting, it looks painterly in the foreground, and then when you back up, it has kind of a photographic look even today, much to my dismay, because I don't always want it to look as photographic as it does.
And you are working predominantly in oil?
Yes. I've worked in acrylics, and I gave that up a long time ago. I used to do a little patch of acrylic now and then in a painting, and then I would glaze over it in oils, so it would look very much like oil. And I'm not even sure why I did acrylics in those patches, but it must have been some logistical problem I was trying to solve. I've used a little bit of the encaustic once or twice, but that was when I was a student, so pretty much I focused on oil. Mm-hmm. For a very long time now.
And Denise, tell us a little bit about your style.
Well, I typically paint in pastels, and I'm trying to paint more in oils also. And I think my style is always evolving the more I paint. I like to paint on location, and I usually paint till my energy or excitement about it is done. And then I stop, and I paint the rest from memory if I need to paint anymore. I don't have the patience to do really big, long paintings like Bruce does, or the knowledge. My painting style, I'm trying to simplify more and more all the time and become more expressive with color. So I just have so much to learn. So it is always probably going to keep changing.
Approximately how big are your works?
Oh, they can be pretty small. I like 6x8s myself.
Is that inches or feet?
Only in inches. But I would say my typical paintings are probably, 10 by 12, 11 by 16, somewhere in there, sometimes larger.
You use the phrase that you paint in pastel, and I guess a lot of us have thought that that was drawing with pastel. So if you want to elaborate on that, is different for you.
Well, it's different than drawing. Technically speaking, when you're painting in pastel, if it covers the surface, that's a painting. But if you leave some of the substrate showing, then it could be called a sketch.
And this is a question that we like to ask all of the artists that we interview. When did the art bug bite?
The minute I could hold a pencil, I started drawing. And I grew up in a really rural area. We didn't have art in my school until a tiny bit in high school, and so I would just draw whatever I saw on the notebook paper. And the biggest thrill was when our neighbor who worked at the newspaper brought me a roll of plain newsprint. I'll never forget that. It was like the highlight of my life because I had all the drawing paper I could want. So it was good. So very young.
And for you, Bruce?
Well, I can remember doing a drawing probably in third grade and thinking it was better than everybody else's. It was one of those things where I was able to, you know, when you have a canted roof and you have the chimney, you know, I had the chimney going straight up instead of out to the side and things like this. And I just started to think of myself more as the artist in the class, probably in about third grade. But by the time I was 10, I was kind of the classroom artist where I had to do the reindeer and the Santas and gladiators and stuff like that on the blackboard, which I thought was kind of fun, actually. Mm-hmm. I was very much in competition with somebody else who was the son of a couple of illustrators, and he had his chops down, so it pressed me into action. And there, it was mostly, of course, it was soldiers and airplanes and things of that type at that time, but when I went into college is when I really understood I was going to be an artist. About sophomore year, I decided that I just wanted to do what I wanted to do, and somehow I was going to get through.
Where did you grow up?
I was in a community north of Chicago. So I had ravines and shoreline. The shoreline was facing east, and the water was cold and gray. But I had all these wonderful places to play and hang out. So I think that has something to do with my subject matter, because I enjoy cut banks and bluffs and erosion patterns and things of that sort. I think that's where I'm still using the same imagery from a child.
Did you go to school in that neck of the woods for college or someplace else?
No, I moved away to college. I went off to Nebraska. And it was a small college in Nebraska, flat as could be, not interesting at all. Then I ended up in the University of Iowa, which wasn't much better. But at the same time, I changed from being an abstract painter when I was a student to doing realism at that time. And there was something about the landscape in Iowa for some peculiar reason that really attracted me, even though it was rather sere and flat. So I ended up doing some road scenes, which roads are still featured in my art today. Then I became a photorealist, and I got a little bit of attention at that time because it was just starting, and I ended up getting into a major gallery in New York, O.K. Harris. So I was in the second wave of photorealists in a few books, but the images are completely different than what I do now. I had no relationship to nature whatsoever. They were small objects, but blown up. Mm-hmm. And they were small cultural objects, like a towel rack or a box of thumbtacks or a foil gum wrapper, things of that sort. But when I came to California, I started to get out into the mountains, and somebody I knew took me out trout fishing. And while he was trout fishing, most of the time I was photographing water. All these patterns in the water were so amazing to me, and I ended up doing a painting of water. That's the first one that took 3 years. That was my bridge, so to speak, into nature, was getting out and pretending to trout fish.
You're listening to KCBX Public Radio here on California's Central Coast. And our guests today are Bruce Everett and Denise Shriver. They are painters who are a member of an organization called SLOPE, which stands for San Luis Outdoor Painters for the Environment. They're working on a project honoring 50 years of Montaña de Oro State Park. We continue now with Denise Shriver talking about her early years as an artist.
And Denise, where did you grow up?
I grew up out in the woods, right below the gate to Mount Rainier. So it was very rural, and grew up on acreage. I've never lived in town to this day, knock on wood. And very much a tomboy, very much a nature person. Dogs, horses, go out in the woods, wander around. Yeah.
Did you have any formal education when it came to artwork?
No, we didn't have any art in my grade school, and I had one semester in eighth grade, and then a little bit in my senior year. And that was it. And then, unfortunately, my parents weren't supportive. And so I just went out and got a job. I didn't go to college. And then I lived in Europe for a while and worked on a horse ranch. And when I came back, I took a painting workshop with Albert Handel. He's an internationally known pastel artist. And it was actually in Cambria. They used to have classes there. And that was in 1998. And I thought, this is it for me, this medium. I wanted to be an artist from the time I was 5 years old. I was like, that's all I want to do. And so that opened it up that it was something that I felt like I could learn about and get workshops and get better at. And I really liked it. And I thought, well, maybe I do have some talent, you know?
So you basically put your artistic aspirations just on the back burner?
I did. I needed to because I needed to work. Now I paint more. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I understand. I did that when I had my bakery. It was 13 years of no artwork. It was just all focusing on the business. You know, it's tough.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was teaching at the university level for a long time, and I got a lot of students that were very similar. They were coming back after a very long hiatus or an interrupted life, and the passion was at a high level by the time their family had grown up and they really wanted to get back to what they weren't able to get to earlier. It's inspirational to see how they developed so well.
I did take classes in college. Mm-hmm. I was a biological sciences major, but I took a lot of art classes. And I'm much more focused now than I was then. I think I have more confidence in what I want to do and what I want to say.
I can understand that. Yeah, you do get more confident about who you are and what you want to do.
As far as Slope's project with Montaña de Oro, are you talking at all as a group about how you're approaching doing a project like that? How do you start creating that sense of the program that you're doing that year?
Well, first of all, we asked for a volunteer to be a chairman of the show and a co-chairman. And so we have that in place. And then we have a structure that they follow. And we've also initiated paint-outs, monthly paint-outs, usually the second Saturday or second Sunday of every month, and we meet out there and paint, usually at 9 o'clock in the morning or in the afternoon for the sunset. So we email and we make those plans, and we paint, and we see what we've all done. And then we also have committees, you know, to hang the show, make the labels, and do promotion and things like that. So it's pretty involved.
Are you making your own selections, each of you, or do you get together as a group to figure out what the show is going to encompass?
Everybody does their own personal selection. And in Montaña de Oro, it's wide open. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So whatever people are inspired to paint, that'll be their best work. Mm-hmm.
Whatever you can get to with your painting kit.
There's always that.
Montaña de Oro. I've got to pronounce it more correctly. After I've noticed you were all using the Inya properly. Yes. So Montaña de Oro is so extensive, and it has so much variety, and it has mountains, of course. If you have very long trails, it has these wonderful cliffs. And I'm surprised that nobody who's horse-oriented did the trail. Did you do a trail with horses by any chance?
No, but years ago we used to trailer out there, mm-hmm. and we'd ride along those bluffs. And then we'd take the horses after riding all day along the ocean and up on the bluffs, and we'd bring our nice clothes and change in the camper, and we'd go to Hoppy's, mm-hmm. you know, for dinner, and the horses were eating their hay in the stock trailer. So I've been out there horseback a lot.
Yeah, I have friends who had horses out there for years and years, and they love the trails out there.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that most of the paintings are landscapes.
Yes.
Or cityscapes, yes. Mm-hmm. Does anybody go in and do tight introspective works, like just a small piece of like a bark of a tree, or is it more expansive expressions?
One thing I thought was interesting one day on one of our paintouts, as I arrived a little later than some of the others, and Larry Kappen, who is the one who has done an announcement image, was sitting about where the announcement image is now, right by the visitor center or the little cottage. And he was painting a pile of rubbish that had come out of the trees that had been cut and trimmed and just left in a pile. And it was just going to seed. Nobody had ever cleaned it up. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, well, if I had shown up and seen that, my thought would have been, well, they sure ruined that view. But he was turning it into the subject matter, and he made it look fantastic. So you never know. No. We're all so different in our approaches and what we're attracted to. I think your idea of doing something kind of introspective, as you put it, is an interesting idea. It could have been just a small latch or something on the house or something like that, or it could have been some interesting little detail. But it's such a almost intimidating environment. You just have to go out there and tackle it and get the majesty of it. I think with time we probably would get into the smaller, more personal points of view, possibly.
I think your example of someone looking at the leaves and the rest of us tripping over them or going, why didn't that get removed, is just such a statement about what artistic expression is all about. And if all of us saw the world in the same way, it'd be kind of boring, I think. I'm accused of that a lot when I'm walking around with a camera. Why did you think of taking that? Well, I don't take groups of people, so I'm looking at patterns or I'm photographing the street. I think it's just really intriguing the more, as you say, that as age comes, as experience comes, sometimes you just go, oh, that is interesting.
And it's usually not the obvious thing, what most people would think. I think a lot of people, when they go out to Montana, they see the vast seascapes that are out there, and that's the first thing they're going to draw. And I love when artists take a completely different approach to it, and they paint something which you would never expect them to do. I have a good friend, Mark Beck, and he did a series of paintings of Morro Bay, and all he painted was the top of the stacks with different cloud formations behind them. And that was his Morro Bay series.
That's great.
And they all got sold to a huge Japanese department store.
That's crazy. I have a couple images. I don't think they're going to be done. But I had been inside of the restored Spooner Ranch House, which is phenomenal, what Mary Golden and donors and everything put together and pulled that off. It's fabulous inside. But I did do some sketches from the inside looking out. Mm-hmm. I don't think they'll be ready for the show. But I like that kind of view and thought, because there's all that rich history about that. And I'm ranch oriented. I'm tomboy, and I like all of that kind of a lifestyle. And to think about, they'd go out and work, or you'd live there and you get up and you look out at that every day. It's amazing.
Did the museum staff sit down with any of you or all of you at some point and talk about the 50 years in terms of changes or things that they were hoping that you would help accentuate, either because it's endangered or because of something? Or were they pretty much just there to back you up when the paintings come in and get hung?
Yes, they're there to back us up. And when I did go into the ranch house, the docent there gave me a very thorough history of everything in there and outside. So that was very rich.
Yeah, my husband donated a bed to the ranch house that one of his good family friends was. She was born in that bed in San Luis Obispo.
Oh my gosh.
And when she passed away, Jeff inherited the bed, and then he wanted to donate it to the ranch house. And it took about a year to get through all the process and stuff, but it's there now.
I saw that bed. Yeah. I saw that. That's great.
For this particular show, there are, what, 7 or 8 of you? Are there more members of Slope than participate?
All of our current members that are active are participating in this show, and we do have emeritus and founding members, but they're not participating in this particular show.
And of course, the show is probably limited by the wall space. How many works are going to be in the show?
Well, there's 11 artists, plus this year we've invited a guest artist. He is our newest applicant for Slope membership, and we thought it would be nice to invite him. So that'll be 12. And each artist will have up 3, maybe 4 paintings, depending on the space available.
We're figuring this could amount to about 45 to 50 paintings.
That's a pretty good show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the sale of these works Does a percentage go to the museum or to the state in terms of helping to support Montaña de Oro? How do the funds get used?
So a certain percentage will go to the Central Coast State Parks Association. 30% of the painting sales will go to that.
The Central Coast State Parks Association's mission statement states, they are working in connection with state parks, the community, and others to provide quality interpretive programs within local state parks and preserve the natural beauty within them. Their website is ccspa.info.
Well, this has been a delightful afternoon. I wish to thank you both for letting us jump into your lives this way and invade your personal space. Thank you so much, Denise.
Thank you both. We've really enjoyed it. Hope to see you at the show.
Hope to be there. And Bruce.
Yes, thank you very much. And looking forward to having this show and seeing you there.
Krissa and I would like to thank this week's guest artists, Bruce Everett and Denise Shriver, members of SLOPE, the San Luis Outdoor Painters for the Environment. Bruce's website is bruceeverett.net, and Denise's website is deniseshriver.com. Shriver being spelled S-C-H-R-Y-V-E-R. The San Luis Outdoor Painters for the Environment's website is slope-painters.com. The Morro Bay State Park Museum of Natural History is located at 20 State Park Road in Morro Bay, the driveway just to the north of the entrance to the marina in Morro Bay State Park. Hours of operation are 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. daily. The art exhibit opens February 1st and runs through February 29th. There is an artist reception tomorrow, Thursday, February 4th, at 5 p.m. The museum's phone number is 805-772-2694. Participating artists, in addition to Bruce Everett and Denise Shriver, are Will Bateman, Dennis Curry, Julie Dunn, Larry Kappen, Roseanne Seitz, Laurel Sherry, Peggy Turk, Deborah Veldkamp, and Phil Wright. The month of February finds three exhibits concurrently showing at the San Luis Obispo Museum of Art. Eric Olson's show, titled I Matters, completes its run on February 28th. An artist reception will be held on Friday, February 5th, as part of Art After Dark. Opening this Friday, February 5th, is the Central Coast Watercolor Society's Aquarius 2016. This is a Pacific regional show exhibiting the best of watercolors from the West Coast. The show runs through March 27th. Also opening this Friday is the exhibit by the Central Coast Sculptors Group, an affiliated group in SLOMA. The show runs through February 28th in the Upstairs Gallery. For more information on the activities and exhibits happening at the San Luis Obispo Museum of Art, visit sloma.org. SLOMA is located at the south end of Mission Plaza in downtown San Luis Obispo. You have been listening to Ears on Art, a twice-a-month interview program produced here at the studios of listener-supported KCBX Public Radio in San Luis Obispo in Central California. The offices of KCBX are located at 4100 Vachel Lane, just off of South Higuera near the intersection of Los Osos Valley Road. The website is kcbx.org, and the phone number is 805-549-8855. I am Stephen DeLuque. Please join co-host Krissa Hewitt and I as we continue our conversation with Denise Shriver and Bruce Everett on next week's show. As always, thank you for your continued support, and we hope you have a pleasant afternoon.